The following talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi during a Fusatsu ceremony at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
It is taught, unwholesome effects come from unwholesome actions, while wholesome effects are seen to come from virtuous acts. Thinking that ordinary people, those who strive to determine through evidential reasoning why this or that specific feature of the effect emerges from such and such specific karma, may come to denigrate karma and its effects, and thus destroying conventional truth. The Buddha stated that the fruitional effects of karma are inconceivable. Thus, speculation on or analysis of karma and effects has been discouraged by the Buddha. So Fusatsu is a renewal of vows. So for some of us, it is a renewal of vows we've taken. For others, it's a renewal of intention or sort of personal vows. For some, it's just becoming acquainted with these essential teachings of Buddhism. We start with the Gatha of Atonement, all evil karma ever committed by me since of old. So all week in Sesshin, practicing mindfulness, studying the self, cultivating compassion, loving kindness, doing metta practice, all of this is good. So why is it so difficult? Are we just intrinsically somewhat messed up? A lot messed up? Different religions have taken that question up in different ways, because in every time, in every place, we recognize human beings' capacity, in fact, sometimes the penchant, passion for causing a lot of harm and trouble. The Buddha realized there is nothing intrinsic in anything. So the idea of being intrinsically good or bad is not true about us, it's not true about an action, it's not true about a word, an intention. But we do create karma. Karma does have an effect. And what the Buddha is saying is that that web of causation is so profound that we shouldn't spend a lot of time trying to figure it all out. And yet, it is taught that it's really vitally important to study karma. And part of that is to understand it, to understand how it functions, how it's created, how it shifts, how it remains the same. And an important aspect of that is gaining trust and faith in karma. That's why that passage is pointing to how we can begin to have doubts about that. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old, all self-clinging karma that arises from greed, stinginess, so we have the precept of being giving to not steal, to give generously to not be withholding, to honor the body, to not misuse sexuality, to meet, encounter, and transform and liberate our greediness. Karma arising from anger and hatred, and so we have the precept of affirming life, not killing, proceeding clearly, not clouding the mind, which in and of itself may not be an act of anger or hatred, but in that sort of compromised, intoxicated state, we become very vulnerable and susceptible to our own kleshas. And anger is there. We have the precept to actualize harmony, to not be angry, to see the perfection, to not speak of others' errors and faults, which is a form of aversion, of aggression, to realize self and other as one, not elevate the self and blame others. And karma arising from delusion, We have the precept of experiencing the intimacy of thing, not defiling the three treasures. Arising from my bodily actions, my words, my thoughts and emotions. And so we are practicing being mindful, which is not just in our meditation to develop concentration and insight, but it is so we are aware, living in awareness, and present to what we're experiencing, what's happening. What's happening in front of us, what's happening within us. The Buddha taught this in the teaching on mindfulness. So that we can be aware before we speak, before we act, and not do so just impulsively. Before we act, we can reflect on causation. What's the probable consequence of this? There may be something we want. The Buddha said, yes, in that action there is pleasure, but there is something more that oftentimes will come. And the Buddha said, so now look further and see the danger. See what else the consequence of that action will be that you may not want. And to reflect on the effect of that one action that's going to, and what that's going to be on others. To be mindful so that we can, in that moment, remember our vows, remember our intentions, remember what it is we're trying to do, how we're trying to live. Dogen said, we see both wholesome and unwholesome results occurring in the world throughout time. Ordinary people deny cause and effect when they see kind and fair-minded people suffer and die young, while those who are violent and unjust seem to prosper into old age. Such people can say that neither crime nor beneficial acts bring consequences, so it doesn't matter. They don't realize that the consequences of our actions follow us for 100, 1,000, or 10,000 eons. And so certainly in the Buddha's time, perhaps all the way down to the present, there have been a lot of different schools of thought about causation. And so at the Buddha's time, there were communities that believed that there was no causation. It doesn't exist as a force, as a thing. And so there are teachings all throughout that are both teaching about cause and effect, about what brings about within us actions that are unwholesome, unhelpful, unskillful, how to practice those. And again, that is at the same time so that we're generating faith, having faith in causation. And so the teachings say that when we are struggling, when we're angry, when we're confused, in that moment, those moments, we're experiencing the effects of past actions. Karma is the action, intentional action. And in that moment, we're experiencing the fruition, the fruit of that action. And so having, as the Buddha said, having planted the seeds in the past, and not just once, seeds of anger, seeds of stinginess, seeds of fear, all of the strong emotions, then when we meet with someone or something that creates a certain conditions, then that anger or that stinginess or that fear arises. That's how it is that we can experience that in a moment and not expect it, not know in advance that that's going to happen, not want it to happen, not be trying to make it happen. It just seems to happen. And that's why it's so easy to think that when somebody says something that I find unpleasant and I get angry, just like that, I didn't want to get angry, but you said something, I get angry. So that's why it seems that you have made me angry. What you said, I was fine before you said that, and now I'm angry. And I don't see that my mind has engaged in those words and brought forth these seeds, this karma, these associations, these experiences, these memories, these reactions, and now there it is. And so in that way, we often, unconsciously, create a fertile ground for those very things that we would like to avoid to come forth. So when it's encouraged, it arises. So when the Buddha taught that everything we can experience is a result of causes, past actions, and conditions, the conditions of this moment, my own internal state, the fact that I have consciousness and senses so I can hear what you say, I can see something, I can taste something through my senses. And we might also say the conditions of my whole life, of my past, that makes that moment fertile for the reaction that I have, for it to arise strongly. In the Diamond Sutra, the Buddha taught, if one is scorned and reviled by others, this individual has done wrong in previous ages and should fall into states of misery. In other words, if somebody's being scorned and reviled, it's because in past actions they created some negative karma that is now bearing fruit. And the reason the Buddha said that we shouldn't speculate too much on karma is because it, when we try and link, you know, this, what's happening to some prior cause, that can happen, that an effect, a consequence of an action can happen rather quickly. It can happen quite a bit later, or it can happen ages and ages later. In other words, we may never actually see the consequence of that action, and so we can believe that there is no consequence. And what the Buddha said is that karma is immutable in the sense that it's just a force within the human realm, and it's just there. It's true. And so whether we experience the fruit of an action or not, it will come. And so if I've been scorned or reviled in the present, the Buddhist teaching is that I've done something in the past. And now that is bearing fruit in this moment. But then it goes on to say, because of that scorn and revilement in the present age, the wrongs of previous ages dissolve. David Hinton, the poet and translator, he said, if someone derides someone as a worthless bonehead, then it's because of the errors committed in a previous life which have pitched them into some ways of suffering. Once they realize this, they're fine. And so what the Dharma teaches is that in that moment, right, which is unpleasant, that which you'd rather avoid, maybe we'd rather retaliate, defend, get even, that if we do that, then we are creating a more fertile ground. We're basically ensuring that we're going to keep cycling through that. Anger leads to more anger. Violence leads to more violence. And so to bear that in that moment, to have forbearance, to practice it without retaliation, to practice it with compassion, is now expending that karma. In a sense, that fruit of a past action is now being exhausted. So Buddhism teaches that when we are having difficulty, it's extremely important how we respond to it, because we have the opportunity to really transform that karma or keep it going. This is not a system of blame or cosmic justice or God's will from a Buddhist perspective, but really just the workings of human consciousness. In civil society, there is fairness and kindness. There is unfairness and meanness. There's justice and injustice, equity and inequity, inequality, compassion, lack of compassion. And so while very often the teachings refer to the actions or some difficulty that I'm experiencing in this moment is a result of my past actions, it also acknowledges that sometimes something else is going on. That it's not necessarily a result of my past actions, it may be something else. And so in our time, we understand that there are historical, social, economic, faith-based, race-based, gender-based, sexuality-based reasons that we create injustice lack of compassion, meanness, inequity. And so a person can be born into themselves, into a form, a race, a gender, a sexuality, a faith, a class, a particular body, and through no fault of their own, be on the receiving end of harmful actions. And so it's important to really appreciate when Buddhism is speaking about this, it's not just being categorical, right? Because otherwise, and that's where how it gets misunderstood and misapplied, so that everything bad that's happening to me is my fault, basically. It's the result of my action. So it's very important to be clear on that. And either way, however, whatever the cause, once I'm experiencing something that is now in my consciousness and that is bringing forth a strong emotion like anger, resentment, bitterness, hatred, that even if that's the result of an injustice, even if it's not my fault, now that it is in me, I have the opportunity, in a sense, it's my responsibility to practice that well, right? Because now, whatever the cause, I am the one who's acting on that. And I am, so we could see that, and that is not, also not blaming, it's just really recognizing, it's really a recognition of empowerment. Because the suffering, there may be suffering all around, but the suffering that I'm experiencing acutely, directly, is within me. And so recognizing that, right, I now have the ability to practice that in a way that I don't return in kind or that I don't create unnecessary burden for myself. Shanti Devi said, all the shortcomings there are and all the various negative qualities arise through the influence of other conditions. They do not govern themselves. And so when we're overwhelmed with a very strong emotion, it can seem like it's happening to me, right? That I'm in the presence of a force that is happening to me, and I may feel like I have little control over it, which just creates more of that sense of something that I'm being inflicted upon by something. What Shanti Devi is saying is that nothing actually has that self-governing power. Everything is subject to conditions. Everything is empty of any intrinsic quality or force or intrinsic consciousness, right? So the idea that the universe is for us or against us is not a Buddhist view, because it's not what we see to be true. The universe, the earth, works, everything works within its own world, within its own system, governed by its own laws, right? And seeks its own harmony, its own satisfaction, you might say. But not necessarily because there is a consciousness driving it, an intention, a purpose, a plan. Shanti Devi said, these conditions have no thought, no intention to produce a suffering result, nor does the resultant suffering think, I was produced from conditions. Makes me think of the many times when I would be camping or canoeing and would be in very tough situations, you know, on the receiving end of Mother Nature, basically. Rain, cold, wind, exhaustion. And how easy it would be to get angry. I remember once on a canoe trip, paddling across a lake in the middle of what we came to find out was a hurricane that was happening on the coast. This was down in Georgia. We didn't know that, but we were in this tremendous, we couldn't make any headway trying to cross this lake. We couldn't move. We had to paddle like crazy just to stay in one place. And I got so frustrated that I slapped the paddle. I went, God damn it. I slapped the paddle on the water. And you might say there's cosmic justice because the paddle broke in two. So So I got angry, right? I was angry at the wind. I was angry at the water. I was, why are you doing this to me? These conditions have no intention to produce a suffering result. He says, there is no independent creator or permanent self. How then can that independent creator or permanent self, which does not exist, produce something? And thus all effects arise from other conditions, which in turn depend upon previous conditions. Therefore, all things are like illusions in the sense that they don't exist by themselves. They don't come into being by themselves. They don't function by themselves under their own power. And then he says, if we realize this, he says, we shall not become angry with anything. If we truly realize and live within that realization at every moment. But when we realize this on the path, we then begin to see when anger within us arises that we are ourselves creating this. And in that, we recognize we don't have to. All are like clouds and lightning, like dreams and mirages, like the moon and water, born of mental constructions. It says if transgressions, and we might say the precepts, so acting badly, acting in accord with the precepts, are seen as inherently bad or good, then this very idea deprives them of their true nature, their freedom, their emptiness, and I would say their full potential, because we put them in a box. And thus bodhisattvas practice and realize the real nature of all dualities. Since the time of the Buddha, and beginning with the Buddha and going all the way down, there have been teachings throughout in every generation, making it very clear that these teachings are not saying that there is no effect, that because all things are empty, that when there is an action that in and of itself is empty of any intrinsic value, cannot then create a negative or positive effect on somebody else. And that's there are many very intense, dense, difficult, complex philosophical arguments in the history of Buddhism to both prove that that's true and then to disprove that that's true. That it's because nothing exists inherently, because nothing is fixed, that we can transform, we can change, we can free ourselves. That your distracted mind can become still. That being caught in a strong emotion in this moment will change. Right? In a sense, whether you actively practice it or not, it's going to change. If you actively practice, it's going to change in a whole different kind of way. It's because things have no abiding self, that everything that we do and devote ourselves to in practice is not only possible, but is actively changing our lives. And yet, as the Buddha said, we should not get caught in speculating or analyzing just how that transformation is going or where we are in the process, right? And so we should sort of translate that, which he's applying to karma and its effects, to all the moments in which we're trying to figure out, where am I? Why is this not working? When is it going to start working? How much longer is it going to take? In our mindfulness, we become more sensitive and aware to our experience, which means both to the beautiful, what is beautiful and wondrous and sublime and alive, and also to what is more painful. Because we're not recreating and fortifying that sense of self that needs to retreat and protect itself. And then we can more easily make, see more clearly, make better choices, create better conditions, be more naturally kind and loving, as we understand how all of that works. May all sentient beings know happiness and the cause of their happiness, the root of their happiness. That's what that's saying. Not just may they be happy, But may they really understand, may we really understand what is the basis of our happiness? What is the basis of our unhappiness? Then, as that becomes more clear, now we can actively and wisely and skillfully practice within that understanding. And so then we can see all the ways in which we might be working against ourselves as simply as judging ourselves in zazen and realize we're just turning against ourselves. We're doing exactly the opposite of what we're trying to do in that moment. And so this is why the aspect of zazen, which is the calming, the bringing into serenity, into tranquility, these different adjectives that are describing a peacefulness, a basic peacefulness which exists within our mind, which is the basic state of our mind. When we're not, it's not being agitated. And in calming the mind, in order for the mind to calm, the whole body has to calm. Remember Shantideva saying, how do you protect the body? How do you take care of the body? By engaging in those actions which are wholesome, which are good, which are positive, which are helpful. And so calming the mind, the kleshas, our impulsiveness, our reactivity. You know, maybe that's really why we sit here in the Zendo and sit in stillness and silence. So when you really want to lash out, you can't. Right? You're stuck. You're stuck within yourself. I remember Gassho years ago. We had a student named Gassho. I remember during Open Sozan, he was sitting right over there, and he was talking about sitting. He was a big guy, beautiful guy, artist, very creative. And he was sitting there, and he was kind of getting into a funk. And so he was just getting into a funk, and it was getting dark. So he took the person next to him, and he dug a hole, and he threw the person into that hole. That wasn't enough. So he took the person on the other side. He threw them into the hole. And then before he knew, he'd basically thrown everybody in Zendo into the hole. And then he threw himself into the hole. Yeah. And so that moment, so appreciating that teaching on in the moment when something strong arises, judgment, doubt, anger, resentment, you know, just the basic fare that comes up during Sesshin. And that in that moment, when we meet it, right, that's what the teachings are saying. How we meet it makes all the difference. Not just in that moment, but deeper and going forward. And so when we talk about training the mind, it's really reclaiming, returning to, developing this natural capacity we have to not just react impulsively, to hold ourselves, to hold that emotion, to hold that judgment, so that we can actually see into ourselves, see beyond it. You know, it's natural to wonder why it is that people who we see that seem to act so badly, you know, like there should be sort of a karmic justice, a sort of cosmic justice. Like they shouldn't get away with that, right? There's just a natural sort of sense that we have that those kinds of actions, there should be some kind of consequence. And what the Buddha is saying is there is. And that doesn't come, it can come from a court of law, a tribunal, a village. That's how that's handled within that realm. But it will always come from the person themselves. That the consequences of our actions arise from and are borne by ourselves. And we could see that as, I don't know, bad news, a burden. But Buddhism sees it as the opportunity that is showing up all the time. And that if we can look at it that way and have faith in it that way, you know, it can give us some encouragement. And I think that's where understanding sort of the inner workings, you know, which is not to transform our direct practice into an intellectual, academic, you know, knowledge-based book. That everything that we're studying, all of these teachings, as I was saying the other day, are constantly, we redirect them. You redirect them back into your practice, into that direct experience. Dogen said, ceasing from harm. This is the abiding place of the teachings and the practices of all the Buddhas. This is the very source of the teachings and the practices of all the Buddhas, ceasing from harm. And doing good for others is to transcend both the profaned and the holy, not to get stuck in either side, to liberate oneself and others. And that's what's so profound about these moral teachings, is that they function on the level of you know, following the precept. Anybody can read the precepts and basically understand what they mean and practice them. You don't even have to be a Buddhist. So they can be understood easily, fairly easily, just as guidelines of how to not create harm and how to start to live a joyful life. And then if we continue to examine and practice them, we can continue to discover their basis, their real nature, because they really are an expression of the enlightened mind. That Roshi used to always say, that the precepts are basically describing how an enlightened being lives. This is what it looks like. And so in that way, they're endlessly revealing, guiding, and satisfying. And a very important part of that, of this, is non-attachment. To not become moralistic, self-righteous, dogmatic, because they do not have intrinsic good or bad in and of themselves. And so in that way, the teachings are sort of self-checking. Have faith in these, practice them, be diligent, give them life, do not attach to them. How wonderful. Let's just sit for a minute, then we'll finish satsu.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.